I want to tell you a little bit about this picture before I begin. This picture was taken by my cousin once removed, as my mother would put it. And it's at Sable Beach, Lake Huron. Can you see the lake? Actually, when you first look at it, it's... So what is that? But yeah, it's sunset and those dark clouds there that are kind of interesting. A storm was coming in, and Carrie took this picture and posted it and sent it to me by email. It's a gorgeous picture. It would make a lovely painting, wouldn't it? It's kind of that, I don't know, there's the transition of the dark into the light across there that, you know, we look to the light and we can be surrounded by a lot of darkness. It's hard to think about peace in the times we are living in. I once again watched the news this morning. I was having my breakfast and it's like, ah, you know, this is pretty depressing. I'm almost to the point where if Paul wants to watch Sportsnet news in the morning, okay, let's watch that. It might be a little bit more positive. Anyway, I want to tell you, though, about a situation where this happened a few years back, because it was when my boys were in fourth grade. And their class received recognition for consistent school attendance. So they could vote as a class on their reward. And they could choose between a homework pass or the ability to bring a stuffed animal to school with them. Now, you know, those seem like odd things, right, to kind of weigh between. But perhaps surprisingly, they chose the stuffed animal. And one kid told their parents, you know, there's really no such thing as a homework pass. You might get to skip it for that day, but you still have to learn it. So, you know, not having homework doesn't mean you don't have to learn that. But perhaps even at this stage, these 10-year-olds had grown to know a truth. I don't know whether they did or not, but that homework is inevitable. But school itself is unpredictable. Better to choose the stuffed animal to keep you company, come what may with teachers' expectations, social dynamics in the lunchroom, or bullies on the playground. Your stuffed animal companion would be with you through those hard times. In our gospel reading this morning, Jesus interrupts the conversation admiring the temple stones with talk of destruction, ecological disaster, wars and persecution, things that seemingly are both inevitable and unpredictable. Now, by the time Luke's text was written, the destruction of the temple had likely already occurred. So the text is not meant to be predictive as much as meaning-making for those who experienced it and for those who come after. Perhaps the teaching and learning of this text can speak to the truth known deep down. There is really no such thing as getting through life unscathed. The question is how people of faith are to respond and where we find our refuge or our comfort. The Jerusalem temple was truly an impressive sight, meant to convey power and dominance, but it was created by a ruler whose power was marked by instability and paranoia. Herod wanted desperately to project power both to Rome and to those he governed. But he was part of a system, that was capricious and centered elsewhere. He was kind of in the backwaters. He experienced pressure from below and from above, as well as family relationships marked by perceived threat, betrayal, and violence. The projection was necessary because of the insecurity. Jesus' words caution those who see structures like this and see only evidence of power, stability, and authority. His words about coming catastrophes recontextualize the impermanence of human achievement. Whether the temple itself, or governmental systems, or societal structures, or et cetera, we marvel at our own abilities as humans and often see the achievements of wealth and power as permanent, or at least as lasting and impenetrable. But the fragility in the text causes reassessment. People of faith are called away from placing their trust or lasting attention on whatever large stones we see around us. We should instead assume instability, persecution, and unfair systems and seek the power of God in the midst of them. What powerful illusions do our communities need to reassess? Where does true divine power lie, or what does it look like? It's really hard to duck out of the way of this text, even with a long view of history, especially in a world where global and national news is available constantly, with endless viewpoints on what it all means, dire predictions of subsequent developments or assessments or decisions garner more attention than measured ones. Added to this mix is a sense of accelerated instability, increasing potential outcomes. I hear people say, and you probably have as well, I'm normally not an alarmist, or words to that effect. But what do you think? Is housing the underhoused, feeding the hungry, establishing peace, seeking justice, or just being kind to one another? Is it possible? Jesus acknowledges that truly bad things will happen and that we should not be surprised when they do. Close followers of Jesus will not be spared from the effects. End times literature, which this text echoes, follows a pattern of warnings about calamities, followed by reassurance of God's provision for the faithful. Following this pattern, the text doesn't have to point to any specific current events to sound familiar to us this morning and to leave us with a sense of unease. If we seek examples, we can expect to find them, because these things are both inevitable and unpredictable. This unsettling truth is paired with a reminder of God's presence and an exhortation to remain faithful. The good news comes in odd packaging. In the face of persecution and trial, Jesus says, not to prepare one's defense. Now, this will be a challenge and a chance to bear witness to the God of the universe, the one who is unchanging and powerful and yet gives his own son for the life of the world. At first, this seems like terrible advice. If you know this is coming and it is an opportunity to testify, surely that merits the same forethought as, say, an Oscar acceptance speech. But Jesus is clear in his directive that his hearers should decide not to prepare themselves, because God will provide the words and wisdom that will be necessary. The pressure to prepare ahead comes from a fear of not being able to meet the moment. It assumes that the responsibility to witness rests with the accused, and that the truth is not trusted to win out over the accusers. Jesus' declaration against preparation is both humbling and comforting. The hearers are not expected to be capable of mounting a sufficient defense, but Jesus promises that the defense will come anyway, from God's presence in the midst of them. It is endurance, not triumphant acquittal or eloquent defense of the faith, that is lifted up as the virtue. Near the end of our church year, which is coming very soon, Advent marks the beginning of our next church year. And during times of increasingly alarming events, these twin reminders of God's provision and our call to endure are timely and relevant. If we are connected to the lived realities of our communities, near and far, if we can find the right balance to strike of comfort and challenge, law and gospel, in the news that the temple stones are not as permanent as they seem, that is where there is the possibility for something new, for a glimpse of the kingdom to shine through. So may we live into that promise. May we carry peace in our hearts. Thanks be to God. Amen.